Hey everybody, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless. And today I want to talk about a couple things. I got a lot in the agenda, but first thing I want to say is, in case you didn't know, I put a link in there. Capital Safety has issued a warning about a safety climb. And just read in there. Download the PDF. Everyone has something out. Nate did a release. Wireless Estimator did a release. I think probably Fierce Wireless. Probably everyone. RCR, I'm sure, did a release too, RCR Wireless. And just get on there and look at the link. There's a PDF. I got the one from Wireless Estimator because, quite frankly, it goes right to the PDF. I couldn't find it on Capital Safety's website, but if you remember, they also had a SnapHooks recall not too long ago. So now this isn't a recall, it's just a safety warning about what it is. It's a cable and the safety climb. The way I read it, and I gotta be honest with you, I didn't spend a lot of time on it, but the way I read it, I believe that the strands either get rusty or something happens and there's a potential of slip, which that doesn't really surprise me. So it's all the more reason to be 100% tied off. You know what I mean? Like even when you're using a safety climb, and I think that's a recommendation that you still use your safety lanyards when you're climbing up. Granted, it's slow and a little, frustrating because you have the safety climb, you think you can zip up. Not saying I haven't done it in the past because, I just clipped on in the old days, you just clip on the safety climb and you go up and you hope for the best. So now you know that you should probably use your safety lanyard just to play it safe. Climb up, clip, climb, clip, climb, clip, climb, clip. Get used to it. It's the way it's going to be. 100% tie off, fellas. And what I wanted to talk about today was, which shortly, I didn't have a lot to say, but is the scope of work. One of the things that the FC, I'm sorry, I said the FCC, but the Department of Labor technically is writing the standards for tower climbing safety. And one of the things they recommended was that you understand the scope of work. Now, the scope of work will tell you what the process, well, I don't want to say process. There's several different documents. The scope of work is going to be the scope of the work you have to do. It's very important that you understand that for a lot of reasons, not just safety reasons, but you want to know what you're hanging on the tower, you want to know what your work encompasses, and you want to know, as a climbing crew, you want to know when to issue a change order. What is out of the scope? At what point do you have to push back to the customer and say, we're not doing that, it's not in the scope? And it's important you understand that because when you get paid for the work you do. You're getting paid for the work in the scope. If something's out of the scope, you have to know when to issue a change order, change request, whatever it's going to be, right? That's why, as the whoever does the bidding, they have to read the scope of work, and the scope of work can be written by several different people. Written by the customer. Customer's going to write it. Here's what we want you to do. Depends on the customer. Some customers said we can't change it. The only thing you can change is the legalities. And I'm going to put a book together. I started writing it. I'm just not finished yet. I'm going to put a package together. I'm going to have a sample scope, a book, and I'm going to do an audio to talk through it because for a scope of work, it's going to be different for whatever you're doing. But right now, I just want to concentrate, say, on a BTS. You're putting stuff on a tower for, say, a carrier. It's just going to be easier. And it would be very similar, say, FirstNet deployment, TETRA, two-way, very similar. And I'll skim over maybe a little microwave. So let's start with the BTS. If any of you have ever done carrier work, you don't necessarily do everything at the site. What do I mean by that? So normally all the construction's done by the time the tower crews get there. Not always, you may work with a construction crew on the ground, but normally the ground guys don't like to work with people in the tower, because in case something falls or happens and you get in each other's way. So let's just assume that the shelter's in and the electric's run, which is, trust me, hardly ever the case. For some reason, utilities take forever if there's non-existing shelter because, each carrier has their own power. So, but let's just assume power's in, shelter's on the ground, everything's ready to go as far as the shelter. What's your job? Is your job to hang stuff on the tower, or is it to put the BTS in and hang stuff on the tower? What's your job? And I'm going to tell you, I remember years ago with Nextel used to have the tower crews just drop everything off. And trust me, those freaking Nextel base stations were heavy. they were just heavy. Motorola, I think they put just, dumbbells in those things to make them heavier. My God, that was heavy. So anyway, But if you've ever done that, you've done everything. Now, today's carrier, I know with, I'm just going to use another for instance, Verizon. Verizon had one crew that put the stuff in the shelter, and that was all you did. You put the stuff in the shelter, you put the racks in, the equipment in. You didn't necessarily power it up. They had a commissioning crew for that, but you would run the jumpers, and you were supposed to test the jumpers. I think it was Anritsu. Back then, it was Wiltron. Anritsu took them over. And your test equipment's very important because if the jumpers failed, you failed. You had to go out and fix it. It was a second trip. And if you got to drive 2 or 3 hours to the site to fix a jumper, and I've done that, I tested it, it passed for whatever reason. When they connected it to the outdoor gear, something happened. And I don't know if you ever worked with Superflex, but sometimes those connectors were a little iffy on the, it's like LDF4A or something. It was over those Superflex connectors were. But anyway, with all that said, know your job. What's your job? Now, if you're doing the tower work, your job's to hang the stuff in the tower, maybe run the cable down. You terminate the cable. Do you run it if there's a shelter or a cabinet inside the shelter, inside the cabinet? Do you do everything? Do you know what to do? Or are you just a guy that shows up on the job site and you do as you're told? Not saying there's anything wrong with that because that happens quite a bit. But now, with TIRAP coming out, TIRAP, from the Department of Labor and the FCC are collaborating on it, and it should be made public here soon if it wasn't already. They're going to put standards in there that everyone on the site should understand the scope of work. So I'm not saying everyone has to read the scope, but everyone has to understand what the scope is. So when you get on site and you have your tailgate meeting on day one, everyone should review what the job is. And I think that's common. I'd be hard pressed to find someone that went on a site and just had no clue what was going on. Normally, you review what the job's going to be. And normally, whoever's in charge should understand that scope. And the scope actually extends beyond that. But know your job. That's what I'm saying. What's your job? The next thing, as an extension of the scope of work, you're going to have a lot of other paperwork. You're going to have a site list, obviously, so you can plan out your sites and you know where you're going. It should include the coordinates, the site information, the type of tower, and things like that. So the guy planning the work, guy or woman, the person, sorry. Didn't mean to sound chauvinistic there. But the person planning the work has to be able to lay out the sites. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, well, just look geographically and lay the sites out one, two, three. I wish it worked that way, but sometimes the parts don't come in or the base station isn't ready for one site and it's ready for another. You're waiting on antennas, you're waiting on hardware, you're waiting on mounts. The reality is, you wind up scheduling your sites based on the hardware. Whatever hardware you have that's available, that's ready, you take that and you do the site. And trust me, when you're on a crew and you run into one city, then you're running 2 hours to another city, then you're running 4 hours back to the previous city you did, it doesn't make any sense. But I think most people that are in the industry understand you don't necessarily set the schedule, the parts set the schedule. If there's one thing different about a site, you're going to go back to that city and do it later because the whole idea is to get the job, to get everything deployed as quick as possible. With that said, there's other issues, site acquisition, deployment, power, utility, et cetera, et cetera. So now, scope of work. You have to know your scope. You have to know what work you're going to do. You have to make sure that your bill of materials matches what you have. And again, this goes back before you even get in the job site. Whoever you send to the warehouse to pick up the equipment, if they don't look at the BOM, bill of materials, BOM, BOM, if they don't look at the BOM and check off each part they get, there's an issue. So let's say they pick everything up and they're missing a part. And then they look at the BOM and say, oh yeah, should have got that. And they run back to the warehouse. And of course, it's not there because maybe another crew came in behind them and they said, hey, we can get a spare. Or maybe it was just never shipped. You know who's going to be responsible for that? You are. You, the tower crew, are stuck with it. So now, whatever the part cost, you got to figure it out. You got to fight with the customer. It could delay things, could delay payment. That's the bottom line. And, I'm going to once again vilify the turf vendors. I'm not saying turf vendors are bad, but there's some real winners out there as far as GCs and turf vendors. They're going to right away say, well, now we have a reason not to pay you. The one thing you don't want is a reason not to get paid. I know a lot of tower crew guys out there that just get screwed for reasons like this. They can't finish a job, so the turf vendor sends somebody else in, pays them a third of the cost, and then refuses to pay the original guy for the work they've done. And I'm going to have some of those guys on here soon. I'm beginning to free up a little time. As winter comes, I have a little more free time. So it's very important that you're thorough with your paperwork. Listen, not many people like paperwork. I mean, it's just reality. But if you guys go pick something up at the warehouse and something's missing, and you checked it off on the bomb, or you didn't look at the bomb, you just said, "There it is! Site 34, pick her up, boys! We won't even go through the stuff." And then you're on site and you wind up missing something. I'm going to use something simple, like a router, cell site router. Router's missing, and you were supposed to rack mount it, and it's not there. And you're going to say, "Oh, I thought it was there." Did you check it off the bomb? You got to be thorough with your paperwork. Like it or not, that's just part of the job. Hey, the other thing, when you're in the scope, speaking of materials, the other thing that the scope's going to specify probably is miscellaneous materials used on site. Now, I would highly recommend that when you define miscellaneous materials, you say exactly what they are. And why do I say that? Because there should be no interpretation of miscellaneous materials. And I'm going to tell you why. In my post here, I put, you may consider miscellaneous materials as zip ties and vapor seal, right? Like stuff just to finish up the job. Oh, we'll need to use zip ties. We'll need to use vapor seal. The customer may consider that grounding wire, say the 200 foot from the RRH down to the ground of number two copper, bare, you know. They may say, "Well, that's a miscellaneous material. What's the big deal? 200 foot of copper." So now you're 200 foot of number two copper, you're talking a little more money. Six RRHs and they want a separate run for each of them, now you're talking a lot of money. 10 sites, now you're talking a ton of money out of your pocket because you didn't define miscellaneous materials. Listen, when you're dealing with a customer, if the customer says a scope can't be changed, that's fine. However, usually they will change the legal parts of the scope. Legal meaning definitions, legal meaning the company name, the terms, and things like that. Now, most companies, and I just happen to know a lot of OEMs are very, well, I shouldn't say that. The contracts that I've seen between the OEM and the contractors are pretty fair. And the OEMs, I thought, treated the contractors better than a lot of turf vendors. My opinion, that's an opinion. I know some of you are going to go out there and say, "He's full of crap. I got screwed." And you know what? A lot of you probably did get screwed. But I'm just telling you what I've seen. So, when you define miscellaneous materials, be very clear on what they are. Like I said, because the customer is going to push that to the limit. Are they going to do it to be jerks? Maybe, but chances are they're just doing it because they said, "Hey, that's included. What's the big deal? It's ground wire. Anyone pay for copper lately?" That's just an example. I'm just throwing it out there. But I just happen to know that most contractors, when they say miscellaneous materials, normally they mean like zip ties, vapor seal, electrical tape. Things like that. Things that every climber should have in their pouch no matter what, okay? So, just saying. Maybe if you don't know what I'm talking about, maybe it's time to look for a new line of work. You know, don't be an airhead. You know what I mean? Miscellaneous materials. All right. And you know what I mean by zip ties and everything. All right. So, I'll put something together. I'm probably going to sell that so I can afford another year on a website. I'm not complaining, guys. I enjoy doing this. So, the next thing I wanted to get into was a little feedback. So, when I talked about the tower owners and tower, I talked about American Tower and the inspection of sites. I had someone get back to me and tell me that American Tower does inspect every tower annually, minimum annually. And the guy that got back to me was a pretty cool guy. Maybe I'll talk to him some more, but he mentioned that. He, in particular, and a group of American Tower people, which I believe this, they know the FCC lighting regulations inside and out, so they make a point to know exactly what's going on at every lit tower. But whether a tower has a light on it or not, and we're talking over 28,000 towers in the US, people, he said they do get out to each tower site at least once a year. So they're on top of their inspections, from what he said. He said if something's wrong at the site, they're quick to fix it and then find it. And they do the inspections the best they can. However, if you see something wrong at the site, maybe you should let them know. If you don't know who the American Tower rep is, maybe at least call into their NOC. I think they have a NOC still. I'm sure he'll tell me that next time he talks to me. But so American Tower's on top of that. They are inspecting their sites, and it's very important to them that the sites, the towers, are as safe as possible because they have a lot of liability and they pay insurance. I'm sure if something's wrong, their insurance will go up. Just like you with your car, if something happened, if you wrecked your car, if someone even backs into your car and you weren't even in it, chances are your insurance is going up. Very frustrating. So the other thing I had a feedback on training, and someone wrote me in and said about now this guy's from the UK. I think they're safer over there. Obviously, it seems like they have fewer accidents. You don't hear about as many fatalities, at least. So he brought up that what they've done is they got IRATA certified. And the reason is because they wanted their rope safety people to be able to cross. They wanted their people to be able to cross the face of a tower safely. So they took the extra step and got IRATA certified, which is pretty awesome. So now they use rope access on many jobs that they didn't think required it before. But now that they know more about rope access, they can do so much more efficiently, quicker. So rope access is a big deal. Now here in the States, a lot of people are SPRADA certified, and IRATAs, they're both awesome. Okay, these guys are amazing what they can do with ropes. And I think I'm going to interview a guy. I did interview him actually, but I'm going to publish it on the next podcast. Todd Horning of Safety One, who's SPRAT 3 certified, and he did all three certifications. And he said it just becomes a passion working with rope, working with knots. Being able to rig the rope. I'm sorry, I said rig. Yeah, being able to rig the rope, and to do rope rescue the way this guy can is amazing. So, I know I talk to a lot of tower climbers that don't understand it or don't like it, but let me tell you something. If it just sounds awesome to me what they can do. I mean, most guys, I'd say that get into it for a hobby, probably do it because they're into mountain climbing or something like that. And I know we don't say rappelling, we say controlled descent in the tower industry, but these guys are amazing what they can do with rope. And I put videos out there all the time on my website. Well, I'm going to do more about rigging training here. I think I got a few more rigging training videos. But when you can see what these guys can do, just get on YouTube and, just rope rigging and things like that, IRATA, SPRAT. It's just unbelievable. What they can do with rope, how they do rescue in different rescue situations. They're just ready for anything. And most of being ready is that they prepare. And for instance, when these guys go out to a site, they don't just start climbing up and doing the work. They prepare everything first. They prepare their safety lines. In this case, they just prepare the ropes way ahead of time. So they're ready for anything, and I'm glad you wrote in. Thanks. The next one is on TIRAP, which is TIRAP, which is going to be the new standard set for tower technicians between the FCC and the Department of Labor collaborating on it. Maybe I should put a link in there so you guys can see what I'm talking about. Maybe I'll do that. So he says, finally, now we might even be recognized for the skilled work we do under very hazardous conditions on a daily basis. Now, maybe the green guys will understand that 2 years doesn't make you a professional yet, but give it time and actually learn from the older and experienced guys. It's all in the details. I'd like to collaborate with anyone interested in writing a climber's Bible. So I'm going to get back to this guy. I think that's a good idea if we could somehow do a climber's Bible, or maybe he could. We'll work on it. I'm just right now trying to get through the paperwork of everything, but I think as far as climbing goes, I know in my old climbing book, it goes through rigging, it goes through safety, rope access, controlled descent. I have it there in front of me. I guess I could go through everything, but I think he's right. And I think when you climb for 10 years, you begin to learn something. You learn a lot more as you're doing it more. And I think for a lot of these guys, and I'm going to be honest with you, it becomes a passion. They really enjoy climbing, and it's very, in this business, it is very hard. As you climb more and more, you think you would make more and more money, and I think a lot of guys do. But I think occasionally, when you start losing jobs to people that are paying climbers like $10 to $15 an hour, it's very frustrating. But I think with the new requirements that they're putting on here, and I think a lot of the tower crews that are going to follow the requirements, I think it'll be a good for the industry. I think some companies will be a little frustrated because they have to pay more money, but I believe things are going to change for the better in the industry. Of course, I'm very optimistic. I'm always a little too optimistic. I always think things are going to get better. You know what I mean? They got to get better, right? Let's pray to God they don't get worse. I mean, we just had that guy that fell off the ham tower. And granted, we look at him as an amateur, but what a shame. He had all the safety gear on him, and he just didn't tie off. And we don't really know what happened. I don't know. I guess we got to wait for feedback. I don't know who will investigate that other than the sheriff's department, because it wasn't like he was on the job. I think a lot of these hamsters just do each other's favors. So I guess we'll wait and see. And just to be fair, as far as tire op, got a lot of negative feedback. A lot of people think it's a bad idea to set standards. One guy got back to me and said that it was stupid and that it's only a recommendation and that nobody has to follow it. And the only thing I have to say about that, while that may be true, I guess you don't have to follow it, but OSHA does want you to follow the safe climb rules. And I put in there the link about Moreland Enterprises, who got a $52,000 fine in July of 2014, and because they take there were guys climbing without 100% tie off. So I think OSHA's priority, granted, while they have to investigate fatalities and accidents, I think if they know about someone who's not doing a safe climb and it's reported properly, and I talked to guys that tried to report things and they just feel it didn't go anywhere. So I'm not sure what the story is there. But in this case, they caught these guys, gave them a fine, they caught them, and $52,000 is a serious fine. And after talking to Todd Horning the other day, I understand now that prevention of an accident is more important than after the accident. After the accident, they have to piece everything together and try to figure it out. But the prevention of an accident is huge. So if they catch someone who is not following the recommendations, let's say, not following the rules, and is putting someone's life in danger, of course they're going to fine them. I'm beginning to understand that now. That's why the fines are so heavy on prevention, because what they want to do is prevent an accident the best they can. You have to hammer these people who aren't following the rules. So go ahead, do what you want to do. Just don't be surprised if you get hammered like that. By the way, I put the whistleblower fact sheet in there. Maybe that'll help out the people that work for you. It's just one of those things that I think we're getting better at, and I think people aren't going to stand for unsafe conditions anymore. Nobody really wants to lose their job, but nobody wants to work for a maniac either that doesn't care about their people. And there's a lot of people that just don't care. It seems like businesses are, I don't know, it just seems like in general, a lot of businesses don't care about their employees like they used to. That was one nice thing about all the family-owned tower companies, that a lot of big turf vendors put out of business because they actually cared about their people. They really tried to do the best they could. To take care of them in more ways than just safety. They tried to train them and treated them like family. But you had a lot of these contractors, and I remember a lot of them that had these guys do work and just wouldn't pay them. They wouldn't pay them. They took the chance if they went to court. And how do I know that? Because I worked for a company that didn't get paid. The only difference was we took them to court, and it wasn't just a threat. Legal fees were just a common thing, unfortunately. And you wonder why these costs go up and up. It's because of these jerks out there that don't want to pay you. They find whatever reason. The best thing you can do is take them to court. Now, for me, that's easy to say because I wasn't footing the bill. The company I worked for did, but that was just one of their bills, legal fees, along with insurance and risk and liability and all the other crap. Okay, let's move on. So, once again, I have a little blurb in there about Bridget Hester, who's working hard in Hubble Foundation. She's doing a great job, and she just gave out another award for the Widows Fund, where she's, I'm sorry, I had to look at the name, but it's Carrie Platts. She lost her husband, Daniel Platts, back in 2007. So, Jet awarded her some money for her to go back to school as a scholarship fund. It's enough money to help her out and maybe help her pay for a few bills. And the other thing is, I talked to Bridget yesterday, and she's also working on three more scholarship funds for people. She's doing the best that she can, and she's working really hard. You got to remember, it's a one-woman show, right? She works on a lot of volunteers, and a lot of you guys really help her. So she's really going out of her way to make this happen. The scholarship fund's a great thing. She's trying to help families out. She does anything she can for these guys. And it's a one-woman show, which is really impressive. Think about it. One person is raising about, I'm guessing, about 20 grand a year and giving it out to the people that need it. So she's pretty awesome. Now, with that said, Nate started the Tower Family Foundation, and they already have 400 grand. 400 grand. And they're going to give that out to Tower Climbers families, which is awesome. So with that said, what I'm hoping is that they make it public who they're going to give it to and how much. I'm curious to see where the money goes. I'm really excited because they can help a lot of people with 400 grand. I mean, that should be able to help, you know, tons of families. And trust me, in the past 2 years, what is it, it was 13 last year, nine or 10 this year so far. So I'm hoping they can reach out to every one of those families and do something good. And if you're one of those families, maybe you should reach out to Nate and see what they're going to do with it. Because I'm really looking forward to seeing how they're going to help the families. It's very exciting to me. The more people that can do this, the more people that support them, that support the families of the fallen, it's just a wonderful thing. It really is. It makes me feel good inside that we have so many people out there hustling to help these people. Because let's face it, whatever the reason, you know, the families have a serious, they lost a loved one, right? I mean, it's a horrible thing. Mothers losing children, you know, parents losing children, husbands or wives losing husbands, kids losing parents. You know, it's seriously, it's a family affair, and it's a shame. So all we can hope for is the best here. And they should really be able to help a lot of people. So let's hold them to it. They'll make it public. That's one thing Nate always does. Nate makes things very public. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they are going to do next. So, and like I said, my next podcast, I'll air the interview I had with Todd Horning, who's a Sprad 3 level trained climbing instructor for Safety One. Cool guy. Very passionate about safety. I mean, it's really cool. He's so into it. He seems to really enjoy it. And, you know, he does a lot of training. Not only, I know you guys think these guys are just in the classroom, but he'll actually go out and train on location for different people for different reasons. And not just tower climbing, you know, he'll train linemen. You know, he'll train anyone doing SPRAT training. I mean, he's just really into it. It's a passion. And we talk a lot about the rope access. Rope access, I think, is really cool. The other thing he brought up, just want to make you guys feel good out there, for all you guys think that you can't do it or won't do it, he said the oldest guy they ever saw Sprat 1 train was 69 years old. He said the guy was a bulldog. He said the guy was pretty awesome. So anyone who's out there saying they can't or won't do it, just think of this 69-year-old out there doing it who passed the test and did a good job and really impressed everybody. So that takes away my excuse. I have no excuse for age. So I think that's pretty awesome, though. Anyways, it's going to take me a little time. I just talked to him yesterday. This is airing in September of 2014, and I just talked to him yesterday. And I got to put it all together. But, yeah, neat guy. And I'm going to do more interviews. It seems like a lot of people like these interviews. I want to interview tower climbers and also other people in the industry. It's just one of those things I have to get around to. I've just been very busy lately. I know I'm whining. Everyone's busy, right? Okay, guys. I think I went through everything. I just want you to be smart, be safe, pay attention to what you're doing. And I talk about planning all the time, and a lot of people say, well, you can't always follow a plan. Totally agree with you. But at least if you start with a plan, you have a guideline. You can't always follow the plan 100%. I'm going to give you an example. You know, years ago, when they had the shuttle, and the shuttle, let's say when they did went to the moon, it wasn't a shuttle, it was more of a rocket ship, I guess, back then. And when they would go to the moon, technically, the spaceship was only on track, I think they said, 3% of the time. The other time, it was correcting. And I think that's a lot like our plans. We make a plan, and we have a goal, right? But constantly throughout that plan, even though we're not 100% on the path that we want to be on, we know the goal and we're correcting. We're making changes as we go. And that's why I see all the time that adapt, improvise, and overcome. Adapt, improvise, and overcome. So what that means is, just like I said, even though you have a plan, you have to make changes a little bit to stay on path to hit the goal. And that's what I'm talking about. So be smart, be safe, pay attention, and follow the plan, But remember the goal, because you're always going to have to improvise. You're always going to have to adapt in some way, and eventually you'll overcome. So it's really a creed in the industry. And I remember a guy I worked with said that every day. All right, everybody. I just want you to be safe, arrive alive when you get home at night. And the way to arrive alive is to set a good safety plan and hazard assessment out before you do anything. So the end of the day depends on the start of the day. Keep that in mind. Take care, everyone. Be safe.